On the fringes of British politics, I've discovered a curious phenomenon. In those corners of the internet where conspiracy theorists rub shoulders with the paranoid right and the anarchist left, you can find a movement known as Lawful Rebellion. The premise of Lawful Rebellion is essentially this, that there is an article in Magna Carta which means that it is quite possible to simply opt out of the jurisdiction of our legal system by writing a letter to the Queen. Non-payment of council tax seems to be the most common way in which these self-styled lawful rebels take their fight to the system. The consequent court cases end predictably. And so, in a recent example, a boxer in Essex attempted to convince South End Borough Council that he was a lawful rebel under Magna Carta and therefore didn't have to pay his council tax bill. After failing to attend a hearing, he was arrested and sentenced to 25 days in prison, although happily in the end, he was released early after the outstanding bill was paid, allegedly by his mum. On one level, this is very amusing. But on another level, it is really very sad, because so often these cases are about desperate people in desperate situations, believing nonsense they read on the internet, or worse still, desperate people paying what little money they have to charlatans who run seminars offering spurious advice. And in consequence, they usually get themselves into even worse trouble than they were in the first place. In today's Gospel, the Pharisees and the Herodians ask Jesus a trick question in order to trap him. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor? If Jesus says no, he will find himself in trouble with the Romans. If Jesus says yes, he will lose street cred with the Jewish zealots who were attempting to resist Roman rule. No doubt many of these zealots were rather like today's self-styled lawful rebels, desperate people with little to lose. And no doubt they too often found themselves in even worse trouble than they were already in. The Romans, after all, had rather more direct methods for dealing with these sorts of difficulties than South End Borough Council. And Jesus' answer to the question is, on the face of it, simple and straightforward. Pay the tax. And yet he avoids the trap by refusing to get sucked into the question of compliance versus resistance, and instead brings the focus back to God. Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's. Many Christians have seen in this verse a sort of embryonic secularism, a blueprint for the separation of church and state. It seems to suggest two quite distinct areas of activity, one concerned with the state and the other concerned with religion. But that is to rip the verse out of its proper context, and it is also to fail to do justice to the second half of the verse. Give to God the things that are God's. For how can it be that God's interest in human affairs should end where the political realm begins? Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's. These are not two halves of an equation. Give to God the things that are God's. What can we truly say is not God's? Jesus' answer suggests the basic duty of obedience to the emperor, whilst at the same time showing the much greater extent of our obligation to God. We owe the denarius to the emperor, but to God we owe everything. I suppose I'm more or less on the liberal side of most political arguments. And yet I often find myself alarmed these days by some of the arguments used by my liberal friends. In particular, the idea of secularism, the notion of a division between the political and the religious realms, seems to me to be becoming increasingly extreme. It is no longer enough to argue that the state should not be able to impose religious doctrines and duties on the people. It is no longer enough to argue that the church and the state should be institutionally separate. Now it seems that for some liberal secularists, any political view at all that is derived from religion should be considered inadmissible in public life. The issue that usually motivates them is, of course, the question of gay marriage. They appear not to notice that you can find religious and non-religious people on both sides of this argument. Norman Tebbit, after all, is an agnostic.